It's been a while.
I know. Would you like some tea?
I would definitely need some tea.
I have tea and a snack.
My gosh. That's fantastic.
Yes.
You honor me, madam. Pouring the first cup.
It's nice and steamy.
Okay.
And I want you to taste it first before I pass the snack over.
What? Okay.
What do you think?
What is this?
This is Notte Luna.
Oh, okay.
It's going to be released on the shop soon.
All right.
Probably by the time this podcast is out, there will be Notte Luna. This is actually designed for our friends at Bug and Bear Cannoli.
Yeah.
And congratulations to them. I'm going
Yes.
to cheers to them
Cheers
and
to
their
them.
truck or their trailer.
Trailer and truck.
But they've been working with, not with us, but they've been booth buddies, as
Yes.
we call them, booth mates, at various farmers markets past years. And they finally got a really great investor, and they've been doing all kinds of different catering on and off of the studio lots and private events.
Yeah.
They're busy. But they asked me to make them their own blend for their cannolis.
Yes.
And so I created something that was kind of Italian inspired, so but also would taste really great with cannolis. So that's why we have a snack. So I do not have their luscious cannolis with me, but I did notice at Aldi's they started selling cannoli dip.
This is
Well,
not for a small business.
if I can catch them, I will get cannolis. And their cannolis are delicious. They're also ginormous.
Oh my gosh. If you guys are in Hollywood, I know that the Pantages is playing
First Child.
Cursed Child. Literally, the cast would like go to their truck and trailer
Yeah,
every break. So.
think they're parked in front of Amoeba Records once a week.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know if Cursed Child is, I think they do it during rehearsal day that they're
Okay.
there, but either way,
Either way.
they're there once a week.
Yes. When they can catch them.
Yes. So I have some crackers and some cannoli dip, and I want to see if you enjoy the pairing. The flavor I got is snickerdoodle, which I guess is appropriate because they do put a hint of cinnamon in their cannoli mix. So cheers. Oh yeah.
Oh my
I
God.
think this is your first time trying this
Yeah.
paired.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you
Yeah,
think?
that really works with the cannoli.
Okay. So this blend, the base of it is a classic Earl Grey. So when people think of Earl Grey, they obviously think of British. And it was made by the Earl of Grey. However, the actual fruit that makes Earl Grey, which is bergamot, is actually a tiny little wrinkly lemon or citrus from Italy. So it's a very Italian flavor. It's got that like Mediterranean citrusy vibe. So I made that the base. But to pair, because they do dip their cannolis in chocolate sometime and such, and they have like chocolate chip and stuff, I used a cacao husk. And it's a little more milder than cacao nibs. So it adds a little bit of that, more of that like fresh, I don't know how to explain it. It's not like chocolate is like a fruit. It comes from like, it's like from a tree and such. When you get the husk, it's a little bit more milder and it gives more of like that fruity off flavoring.
Right.
So I use that. So it's a chocolate Earl Grey, but it's more bright and citrusy and floral. And then I finish it with lavender and lemon.
Okay.
And I know originally they were like, you got to put some vanilla in this. You got to put some vanilla in it. And I said, no, I didn't want to. But because of that, the punchiness from this gives it a good contrast for the cream flavor that you get off of the piping, which is made out of ricotta.
Right.
So that's why it pairs so well.
Okay.
So what the cannoli guys do is they actually use lemon zest in their ricotta filling. And so the lemon and the bergamot actually pulls those flavors out.
Okay.
So you're not just overwhelmed with cream, you're actually picking up on the milder nuances
Oh.
in their cannolis.
Okay.
And that's how I paired this. What do you think?
It's fabulous. I love it. I love it. It's almost like you can't have it without the cannoli.
It takes on a completely different flavor profile.
Right. But the flavor profile you want is the one with the cannoli.
Yes, agreed.
So it's like if you want that flavor, it's going to be debilitating for you if you just do not want the cannoli at all. So, very mafioso.
Oh.
Oh, you twisted my arm here.
Well, thank you. In the new year, that's kind of what we've been doing is we haven't been very active on our socials,
Yeah.
but we have been collaborating with a lot of small businesses and we have been getting more wholesale accounts and creating new blends for them. So that's been very exciting.
Yes.
So I'm glad that we started this episode on good news because, oh, do we have stories to tell?
Carry on and spill the tea.
Well, we have a confession to make. So we've been hiding this secret for a while, and there's no use in hiding it any longer because unfortunately, this secret was directly affected by the Altadena wildfires that happened earlier this year.
Yes.
But the reason why we went into remission from the farmers markets and everything is because we were planning to start a tea school. And we were grateful to have a venue none other than the Mountain View Mausoleum. So for any of you that have followed us through this, you would have noticed in August our feed was filled with the Lamplight Fete. And that was our first project working with the mausoleum. And we were using it kind of to be our maiden voyage, but we were working to create more programs for the city of Altadena and just the neighboring towns. And we were going to have a regular tea lecture series that would be held in their gardens and in their chapels. And we thought it was the perfect setting. The staff actually had us come multiple times and we did testing classes on them. And they loved that it was a calming, interactive hobby that could be great for the community.
Yeah. But now they're actually doing their best to recuperate from the fire. Very grateful for any of help from the state because that venue had like monumental icons in their property.
So I guess to talk a little bit about the Mountain View Mausoleum, they've been on the news a few times, but Basically, this place was built in the 1920s, and it's literally considered the gem of Southern California mausoleums. It was created by an architect that studied under several other famous architects, Frank Lloyd and that such.
Right.
But he literally made this, I don't know how to explain it. It's just gorgeous architecture and art.
Okay.
It's been shot, it's been used in many films as a backdrop.
Oh, yeah. Like the Cobra Kai season, it's glorious.
Yeah.
It's basically the best, like, I guess, grave site and also like school-esque. What was this like? Like backdrop
Scenic,
scenery. It's
yeah.
like if ever you want to try to actually emulate like old world, like what was this institutions, I guess, you know, with all the filigree and all the ornamental things. Through the walls and the chairs, and even with a church scenes, even
Oh,
like
it's
this.
been very famous for the church scenes. I know that the library and the chapels that are filmed in the series Lucifer were all done at pretty much all done at the Mountain View Mausoleum. And we were going to be teaching in one of those chapels.
Yeah, that would have been lovely.
It's just a really breathtaking, beautiful place. We were introduced to them by LitFest, and we had been there a few times. But we were very gracious to have met the owners. And another thing is, it's one of the few cemeteries slash mortuaries at the moment that are still owned by families instead of institutes.
Yeah.
And the whole staff really feels like a family. They're incredible people. I mean, when we had free time on Christmas, I literally came up there and like spent lunch with them. Like, we couldn't think of any other people we wanted to celebrate our holiday with. We really, the Mountain View staff is incredible as human beings overall.
Yes.
And they really make you feel like family. So it's the reason why it's so heartbreaking to hear that our programs with them are not really going any forward until the gates are open again.
Right.
But we did put a lot of energy and time in working on that, and a lot of things have been on hold because of that.
Okay.
So we've been sitting here since January just trying to figure out what to do. Another thing that we've been really struggling with because of the fires is half of our manufacturing companies are either gone or they're at a stall.
Yeah.
I haven't received some teas since February.
Yeah. I know a lot of companies have moved as well.
Yeah.
And so all this restructuring of our resources has kept us, you know,
Yeah.
still. I
And
don't
not
know.
to be political, but also with the release of the tariff information, we're all sort of just holding our breath right now
Yeah.
and trying to figure out how things are going to go from here.
Yeah.
So I guess that's just the general bad news. I think I'm taking it a lot lighter than we were before. I have to admit, we're re-recording this episode because the last episode was just so somber and so sad, and we were just living in that moment with no answers at that point.
Right.
So sorry it took so long to get this out.
Yeah. But I guess to help us actually get back into the community, we are going to be doing an episode at Lit Fest.
Yeah, we're invited back to Lit Fest. That was another thing that was really bumming us out because, like I mentioned prior, Lit Fest is actually where we met the Mountain View Mausoleum. And they were scheduled in April to be at the mausoleum for the events. But because of what's going on and in lieu of the situation, they had to find a new venue. But as of today, thankfully, we can announce that they do have a new venue, and it's actually in the heart of Pasadena. Again, it used to be at Vroman's, now, and the Pasadena Central Library, which, again, there's another structure under construction right now. Another beautiful historic structure. I'm noticing a pattern here. But we are going to be in the Playhouse di District, and we are going to be near Romans and all that good stuff. So I'm excited. I'm really excited. I also love just, I don't know, we also provide the tea samples for all the guests to come in and view all the authors, and I'm really looking forward to doing that again.
If you guys actually make it, please join us for our panel.
Yes, we have two authors again.
Yes, Miss Norton and Mr. Loving. It's kind of funny with our names.
I know.
But yeah, one is a journalist and the other one writes about women fighting back from female abuse. Or,
She passed the bar too, so she's an Esquire now.
oh, congratulations.
Yes.
So join us. We're offering free tea,
Yes.
as usual.
And we open the floor for questions always. And it's just a really great time.
And moving forward, we're hoping to actually get back to the community again.
Yes. We've come up with some alternatives. And we've used this time to really like reflect on things. People don't really realize this because they just discover us for the first time at farmers markets or they hear us through word of mouth, but T Spectral has been going since 2018. In fact, I think its anniversary is in 6 days.
Oh, thanks.
So how many years would that be? 18, 19, 20. 8 years
8 years.
in 6 days.
There we are.
So we've been around for 8 years, and I was really young in my career as a tea sommelier. And what I did best, and I still do pretty well, is tea blending. But the further I've built my education, the more I know that there are pretty incredible teas out there. And as much as blending tea and fantasy blends are great, there's a whole other world of tea out there. And doing this for 8 years, it's the same thing almost. And I want to try something different. I would love to share more of the tea world that is out there. I jokingly pitch to people when they're like, oh, so what do you do with Tea Spectral? And I kind of explain to them that our teas are kind of like the gateway drug. Because what it is some people that aren't into tea, it opens that world for them with blending the herbs and the flavors with them. And it shows that tea can be unique and different. And I noticed that most people, like me, who started their tea journey, they started with tea flavorings, and I think we call it fantasy blends, where they're not really natural, but they're a combination of things. And it gets people really excited. But once they build a palate, there's other really great, incredible single origin teas across the world that are made by craftsmen, and hand done with generations of like processes that can be shared.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I will say, I think that it's a little too soon to actually explore American tea. I know they've been growing them, all due to the fact that American tea actually relied, basically used to grow just herbals.
Actually, till this day, we grow the majority of peppermint.
Yes. But us trying to actually get into black teas or green teas, it's gonna take a long time. And at that, even the coffee industry is actually being affected. So, whatever is actually coming through, we hope to continue to enjoy it. And, Tea Spectral is already a specialty service. Yes, we are a purveyor of fantasy blends, but now it's going to be a little more specialty.
I mean, unfortunately, and I guess this is a warning, if you see some blends that you really enjoy on our site still, please buy them while you can. If the prices don't go up, they might not even be there.
Right.
Just because the supply chain issues and the tariff issues just trickle down to us small businesses in the end.
Yes, and I know that we have wholesale accounts. If the tea shops that actually hold our teas have our blends, they were probably shipped to them like months prior to any of this.
Yeah, goodness. I mean, like, even our wholesale accounts, just the back and forth emailing and trying to problem solve if the, if I don't have a blend, what's an alternative I can give to them?
Right.
Or do you want this before I completely run out of it, sort of thing. I mean,
Yeah.
that's been the story lately.
Right. So patron them if you find them.
If you do,
Yeah.
yes.
Because I know even, what was it? Bug and Bear actually has our teas.
Yes.
So.
So they do have this blend right now available on their trailer,
Yeah.
and you can buy it from them at farmers markets, anything like that.
Right.
But also, we always give them an alternative flavor. So they have this blend and something else.
Take advantage, please support your local business,
Oh,
small
yeah.
business.
And also, we just partnered with Onesto Coffee,
Right.
which they have a brick and mortar now.
Oh, yay.
So if you're in, I forgot where, I think they're closer to Beverly Hills,
Okay.
but if you're in the area, look up Onesto Coffee. They also do plenty of farmers markets. I know they even go as far as Riverside in Orange County.
How do you spell it, though?
Like Honest with an
Oh,
O at the end.
honesto.
Yes. They do single origin Colombian coffee. So, but they do carry our blends.
Okay.
So please go visit them. I think they have five of our blends at the moment.
Okay.
And then there's a few others. Like I know that 77 Drip, they're on and off on the scene.
Yes.
They cover more of like the beach areas. I know they're in Marina del Rey and Venice.
That makes sense for them.
Yeah.
That makes sense for them.
Yeah, but if you can catch them also.
Right.
And then I know in Georgia there's Phoenix and Dragon
Are they still
books.
alive?
I don't know, I haven't checked.
Oh my gosh.
I'll have to check. I think they are.
I hope so.
They're
That
in
would be weird.
Atlanta. Yeah, they're in Atlanta. They're one of the largest metaphysical shops there, and they actually, like, most of their supplies are all small businesses.
Okay.
So we're there.
Yeah.
What else are a few other
Kettle.
ones? Kettle is our biggest, or not our biggest, but one of our most frequent.
Yes.
And
well, it helps that they're a tea shop, so.
yeah, and they just opened a new location too.
Oh,
They
good.
made a more grown-uppy tea room called the Mad Hatter, and
That's
they do like wine and cocktails, and they do like different culinary theme nights. Like I know every weekend they do like a paella night.
good. Ah. Ooh, okay.
Yeah, it's really cool.
All right. All right.
Yeah. So, very fun. But yes, please go patron them. We are trying to work on getting more pop-ups, but we're trying to get the back-end stuff sorted
Right,
right
it's
now, and that's been our biggest priority. And just where T Spectral is going to ch transcend from here. We've also had more demand for this podcast. So thank you, patrons.
thank you.
And we will be doing more of this.
Indeed.
But I mean, that's pretty much the long and the short.
Yes.
It's good to be back.
Is. It
It's
is.
good to have cannoli dip and
Good
peony nip
tea.
at Paris.
Oh, my
I
God.
just realized this is your first time trying this.
It is.
Sometimes I just know that you come in on me and I'm making all these teas like a gremlin, but I make like over 50 varieties,
I
so.
mean, we're too busy sending out the teas that I don't actually get to taste some of these.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel bad. I feel bad because obviously, like, I'm on the, book side of our business here,
Yeah.
and while we're working, the only time we actually do have is when we go out because
Yeah.
everything is work, everything. So
Isn't that just living in LA, period? I
it
mean, even going to the clubs is work.
Oh my God, man, just. It feels terrible to actually carry business cards because it feels like, oh, I'm clocking back into work. Wow. But you know what? It's literally the lifestyle. If you see somebody, obviously they might be a client, they might be a customer, and you can't help but think like that.
I have gotten some of my best accounts by just casually meeting people.
I mean, actors have gotten the best jobs out of playing video games. If that says anything about LA,
It's a strange, wonderful place.
yes. But yeah, when I get to taste your teas, it's usually when we were at the farmers market. And since we haven't been to the farmers market, all these other blends that you've been blending for like upcoming, I guess, like recipes or for people, I'm practically the last one to have one.
Think you knew I had a cannoli blend, but you never like sat down and had it
I mean,
with
I was there for
a
the business meeting, and all I was doing was smiling and saying,
cannoli.
yeah.
You're like, ooh, look at these
Yeah,
cannolis.
don't you want these teas?
Which, by the way, it went nothing like that.
No, absolutely,
Yeah,
but
we literally had a casual dinner at their house, and our dogs literally ran around frantically.
yeah.
So, but that's the beauty of small business.
It is. And for those that are throwing themselves into their small business as of late, because it's quite the trend. Cheers to you. It's not a easy path to walk, and it takes a lot of strength to continue and pursue. Because literally, I don't know about you, but there are more and more businesses that are trying to, haggle your wages down lower and lower, even though you're way overqualified and you just need a job.
Yeah, remember when it's the going gets tough, it's tougher to work for someone else,
Oh
right?
yeah. Yep. Cheers
Keep
to
that hustle going.
that. Work
Besides,
it.
small business is so much better,
It
so much
is.
more personable.
Plus, you could live with it.
I
My God. I like my soul.
do too.
So, being that, what have you been reading?
Ironically, I have been finishing up the Body Keeps the Score.
Body keeps the score. Okay.
It's actually a very famous psychology book. But it talks about, hold on, I'm gonna get the author for you. I mean, it's pretty famous. Like, once you see the cover, you already know who it is because it has a cover, like, I think it's a Matisse painting. Yeah, it is. Bessel van der Kolk, MD. It's a big blue book and it has a Matisse painting on
It's that
it.
it was that blue book.
Yeah. But it's really cool because it's the musings through the years of this psychologist that one of the things he did was really advocate and prove that veterans suffer from PTSD and PTSD should be treated like a medical expense. So he helped with the lobbying and the creation of that being acknowledged in our government system. But it goes into detail over mainly how all of the traumas have a trending like symptom that's physical. So he does all kinds of terrible things, and I'm sorry, this might be a trigger warning. You can skip like a minute or two ahead, but rape survivors, he goes into rape survivors, he goes into like war traumas, murder, abuse, all kinds of things. All the things. Also incest, which I didn't realize. They also have their own physical symptoms. He even covered the molestation of the children in the Catholic Church when that was a big uproar and there was that huge lawsuit in the 90s. He actually was one of the people that helped create evidence, or not create, but a lot of the victims couldn't fully remember it because it was traumatizing. So he used MDR and hypnosis and different things to get them to remember and confront these things. And they were put out for evidence, basically. So it's really fascinating. It's in one way you learn about just how much trauma affects the general body, physical body. Like mental trauma, but also it's a history of acknowledging trauma in psychology as a standard over the years and how we've developed and understood these skills. So it's a really fascinating read. It's very, very dry for the first, I want to say 20% of the book, because it's just the buildup of understanding the jargon and everything. But once you get into the heart of the book, it is absolutely fascinating. And I'm about 90% done with it right now. And I love it. I love this book. I mean, I feel like a psychopath, literally sitting and painting little dainty paintings or knitting or whatever happy little craft I'm doing while listening to this, but I love it. Yeah.
That's lovely.
How about you?
I've had terrible luck.
Oh
So I had, Hoopla, oh, this gives you free books, and it's basically an online library, and you can get all these fantastic audiobooks,
no.
right? I wanted to dive into like murder mystery, and I wanted to find ones that are actually like pretty popular. And I had the terrible luck with an author named McFadden.
No.
And it just, at first I thought it was just the first book. I'm like, you know what? I am not judging this. This is, probably just a taste for a different reader. I'll give it like the 2 chapter rule, right? Like the first 2 chapters you read or listen to, it can get better. It can get better. I just can't stand the writing. I can't. It feels like a Utah mom trying to tell her child what a murder scene is like, and maybe even like talking to a girlfriend over like cocktails, and
You know what it sounds like? It sounds like two girls hanging out talking about their true crime docu-series that
yeah,
they saw. Is that the
that's the vibe. And I thought it was just one book.
vibe?
I went for two books, and I went for three books, and
Wow. Did you finish the book?
No, I
Okay.
didn't. I
I was about
literally,
to say, you're quite into the abuse right there.
no, I literally was trying to like, do that thing where it's like, oh, you know what? Maybe this author, was just having a transformation. How authors like either have like they're really good books because they had huge passion for it, and then there are like those books where like they're just trying. They're really trying. They're not inspired, but they're trying. And I swear one of them was like that. But the rest of the book, it's still the same writing problem I have. It's not great. I'm pretty sure the ending might be better, but I'm not into it. And for those that are actually loving her work, kudos. Kudos, I wish I could find some James Patterson books. I was this on Hoopla, and I think a lot
Libby
of them.
has them.
I'm pretty sure Libby has them. It's just I'm trying to actually work with all the apps I have right now. Oh,
The
but
apps invested.
I know I feel like this is what our tablets were for. Like you should have actually put all the fun stuff in the tablet, and you keep all your work apps on your phone. And I don't know how many apps we really need because like it slows down your processing speed and our phones age. Come on, stop it, stop it. But anyways, here I am, jumping back to my Ale Triste novels by Arturo Perez Reverte just to like wash it down. And I having read like three of his books. For like the past month, I'm starting to notice that some of the side things that he would actually write about, certain characters, like I have met this man with, like a jagged jaw and like
I love
descriptions
how
of
you
like
just
all of his.
changed your little voice tone
It's
accent.
literally the voice the entire time.
Oh,
The
okay.
entire
I thought
time.
you had like, this is my reading voice.
Well, it sounds more like Ale Triste because he's like a crude, soldier. But like, I was this the reader's always different. It's really funny because the character ages. So like the first time you actually hear the narrator, because it's literally his assistant, that little boy, rewatching the movie.
I fell asleep twice. I'm so
Okay.
sorry.
Well,
But yes.
everybody complains that the movie's like a really bad summary of the
It was
whole
a
thing.
long movie. I mean, it was aesthetically wonderful.
Oh yeah. The book literally has nothing but aesthetics. The guy actually describes every ornamental thing a person would actually wear, which is why people loved it because it was like historically
It's
accurate.
very, what was it? It's Spanish Renaissance, right? Or
Yeah, like at the end
it's
of
around the era of like Three Musketeers. I don't know
more like
if
after, like a little
after.
after, because basically this is like the downfall of Spain.
Oh, so it's like I want to say Cavaliers, is it? Okay. Yeah, so it's
Because
very like swashbuckling Cavalier type vibes. Yeah.
it is, because like at the end of like all of the musketeers and all of the the fantastical like things that the Renaissance brought, the end of it all was literally the American Revolution, the piracy. That's basically how, that's literally like the last book. But either way, he goes through these it feels like Canterbury Tales when he goes right ahead and talks about people's backgrounds before they even say anything or even do anything. And they make these lofty like foreshadowings. Like here's the man right before me. And he is this fantastical, I was this soldier, blah blah blah. But lo and behold, what was it, 2 years after this, with all of his haughtiness, and it just goes on and on and on. And like this, I actually stood before this man in his deathbed, with only one leg and an eye patch, blah blah blah. Just like
blah, blah, blah.
It's just a lot of blah blah blah, but it fills the page, man. It fills the page, and literally, it's so funny because like after his romantic, flowery words, they're literally just saying hi to each other or sharing a drink. And it's like, really?
You know what that reminds me of is the doting in Victorian novel writing that men have on women.
Okay.
Like almost that like female worship.
Yeah.
Like there's this one scene in The Woman in White, and I will always remember it as like the most simpy
yes.
like description.
Yeah.
But he's literally just watching this woman come in, and I forgot the name of the character, but he's there to train the women in the house on art. He's an art teacher.
Right.
And he's just watching her bring the brush up and paint, and there's this, like, three paragraphs on how beautiful her hand is.
Yes.
And I'm just like, bro, it's a hand. Calm down. I'm sure you've seen hands before. But he's talking about how, like, the hand touches the sun and the sun warms it and he can see the veins and, like, it's glowing. It's like this miracle conception. And I'm just like, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even want this. I know there are women that like fawn over it for that, but I'm like, I do not want this. And then it goes into where everyone says that Heathcliff was so obsessed in Wuthering Heights. I'm like, are you sure? Or is it just the fact that he was more obvious?
Right.
Because there's plenty of that kind of writing in Victorian literature or old literature. And that kind of like pining for a woman is there, but it reminds me of that the way you describe it.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, like we could just watch the TV series.
Oh my god, there's a TV series,
because that's literally look okay. That actually captured it the best, according to the fans, because the whole beauty of this novel series are the little moments, you know. Mm-hmm. There was even, like, an article, a huge article about it, when the movie came out in Japan, and the fans actually re-subtitled it for the sake of the, you know, of I don't know what it's called. They actually have their own department for international relations. When it comes down to media in Japan.
Oh.
So they handle all subtitles and dubbing. And they're just like, this is not even a political scene, guys. So just re-subtitle it, please.
Mm-hmm.
And they never did. And, you know, the fans love the little scenes. You know,
mm-hmm.
There are like situations where people have certain jobs that would compromise their relationships with each other, and they make like these really like god-awful decisions for the sake of the crown or for the sake of somebody's honor. And it's the fact that it showed that kind of pressure of what honor meant back in the day.
Mm.
And Asians love it. You know, they're like, whoa, whoa, yes, must have more.
That's cool.
But yeah, I was just, beyond that, the reason why I'm actually trying so hard to actually get into, like, murder mystery is just, it's such a big genre. You know, I've been in fantasy for so long. Especially with
is
like,
it murder? I think you were looking into horror too.
I'm gonna dip into horror soon. Obviously.
I sent you book recommendations.
Yeah, I know. I was just too busy like trying to like find a McFadden book to actually justify why is this person so popular.
No, you're good. I'm trying to remember the one I sent you. I think it was called Flowers in the Attic.
Okay.
Yeah. Flowers in the Attic.
Okay.
V.C. Andrews.
And it's not a whodunit, right?
Not that I know of.
Okay. Because I'm through with whodunits. Unless it's a Poirot, I am done with whodunits.
Summary is a gothic novel, 1979.
Hmm.
It's in a doppelganger series. Okay. And it tells a story of four siblings, Kathy, Chris, and the twins, who are locked away in their attic of their grandmother's mansion by their mother after the death of their father.
Okay.
And the story explores themes of love, loss, abuse, and forbidden romance.
Okay. I will try that. I know I wanted to actually dive into the whole Ripley series, but those are not free.
Yeah.
So, gonna have to actually buy them on Audible or someplace.
What's fascinating, I won't go into too much detail about it because I'd rather you do the research of the author, and we can save this for a separate podcast, because when I discovered like this person's life, it was fascinating. But the original author, V.C. Andrews, actually only wrote 4, and I think there's like 11 or more books written after, but the series got so popular that her parents actually hired a ghostwriter, and he's been writing for years under her pen name. So it's even weirder, but like people that read her books literally swear that the fiction matches the history of her life. And it just gets even more bizarre. So it's like horror gothic novels mixed with a little bit of spice and reality from her existence.
Right.
So I thought you would really like that.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I'm not going to spoil it. And I'm apparently there are a hell of a lot of V.C. Andrew lovers.
Right.
And I'm if you know, you know. I'm sure you're out there listening to this, but I'll let him discover it for himself because it is a Pandora's box.
Yay. Okay.
And I think you would love it.
Yes. Yes.
Oh.
It's just funny that we're talking about this because, like, the books that are trending right now are, like, literally just, you know, solo books. And here
I'm
authors...
really happy.
Yeah, but, like, authors are usually noticed after, like, their third book published, you know? And if you guys are, like, first-time writers, I'm so sorry that you're going to have to actually, you know, go through the begrudging reality that, no, 50K is literally just the minimum. If you go, like, even one word less than that, it's literally like a chapbook. To actually have a real book, people have to actually aim for 200K.
Mm-hmm.
And at that, you're still going to have to publish more and more and more. It's literally like script writing. Like, oh my gosh. Like, you know how insane it is to be a screenwriter? Like, you go right ahead and hope that somebody reads your script, and then you send it off to all of those those producers just so that somebody will actually recognize your name. And then you'll have like 1 out of 10 scripts actually actually produced, and you just hope for God's sakes that you'd actually make real money off of it. And when you do, God damn, it's like a lot of good money.
So, this authoress, without getting into too much of the bizarre details that I want you to find yourself, her first book was such a success that it was featured on Oprah. It became an international bestseller.
Yeah.
Her first book. Literally within 3 months, it exploded. And ironically, it really tested the boundaries of young adult fiction.
Yes.
Because it was meant to be for an older genre, because of how dark it is. But kids the age of her characters got into it that everybody was reading it. Mm. And they were like, these kids were like preteens and teens.
Mm.
And this is before, like, the actual young adult fiction became a thing. So she's really one of the pioneers that created the genre of young adult fiction.
Oh. Interesting.
Without trying.
Okay.
And it's really fascinating because, you know, we always joke about how, like, young adult fiction has a lot of smut in it.
Right.
Like, it can get away with it because it's geared a little bit. Like, there's not as much smut. It's not defiantly smut.
Right.
But her books have very adult themes in them. But because they were so popular and Oprah was approving them and other kids were reading them, none of the parents thought to check. And she really kind of set that standard.
Okay.
But I'll leave that there.
Okay. Cool.
It's a very intriguing story. We can talk more about it, like I said, in a previous podcast. But, yeah, it's fascinating as all hell. And it goes back into, you know, what you were saying, like, you don't get discovered till your third book.
Yes.
Well, her empire never fully took fruition until her third book. And then she released her fourth, passed away. And it was so popular that they needed to bring in a ghostwriter.
Mm.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So there you have it.
There I have it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I know that, you know, before I would just keep talking about Neil Gaiman.
Oh, boy. Let's not touch that.
Yeah. Just because I was really stuck in, like, you know, dark fantasy. And rightfully, I should have been a Stephen King fan, you know, especially with the what was it, like, the Dark World series he had?
You know, it's a weird phenomenon going on right now, is so many people have read so much smut that they want more to read, but they're kind of over it. They're into more of, like, the violence in the smut. That now they are switching to be Stephen King fans.
Oh.
It's an actual thing that's happening right now.
It was a Dark Tower. That's what it was.
Series.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's literally George R.R. Martin's, you know, department.
There you go.
Or, yeah, I was just, you could even get into Anne Rice's, like, masochistic.
Oh, like her Sleeping Beauty series.
Was it Sleeping Beauty? Either way.
Beauty and the Beast.
I'm not going to tap into that. I did read some of it. It got weird.
You're like, this is not for me.
Yeah. But yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. But I'm just happy that I have more time to read. I miss being offline so much.
I have been offline too, and I've been low-key addicted to coloring books, adult coloring books, so.
Oh no, shame on you.
Shame on me.
How could you?
Audio books and a coloring book? That's a perfect evening. I just need my dog right next to me and an iced beverage.
Dude, remember during COVID how that was actually done at bars?
I remember that. That needs to be a thing again.
I'm pretty sure it is. But, you know, we don't do bars. Yeah. It's just a psychological thing now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, if you have intelligence, you'd rather actually do something therapeutic like that.
Well, I mean, with the constant juggle of social media's algorithms and such, I think we're all a little burnt out of it.
Yeah.
But anyways.
Anyways.
This has been really relieving, and I'm glad we finally got through this episode without getting too somber.
Yeah. It just took a lot of time.
I know.
Like a lot of
We
times.
just really weren't like ready, and I mean, burnout is real.
Oh, this is beyond burnout. This is grieving. Okay. Like the bereavement of our time and just.
I mean, I do have the curriculum still, and I do have the projects still. It's just a matter of finding a venue when we're ready. So.
Because obviously you can't drink tea online without spending a dime. And I don't know if people are ready for that yet.
Yeah, so we hear you, we see you, we understand. And for those of you that have been patroning the tea shop, even though I'm not advertising online, thank you so much.
Yeah, you guys are a lifesaver.
You really have been. I mean, you've literally paid our bills. Thank you so much.
No. With that, I guess I'll catch you on the next Author's Cafe.
Yeah.
No. Oh,
Thank yes.
wait. Last thing we'd ever do anymore.
What?
Where would you prefer being at
Right now,
right now with a cup of tea?
this cup of tea. This is gonna be really sad, but I think this is a great example of how things are now.
Yes.
I would be giving samples of this out on a Saturday morning at the heart of the canyons.
Oh.
The heart of the canyons farmers market is no more. It was not renewed by the church that hosted it in their parking lot.
Yes.
And that was actually our hometown market. And that's how we met the cannoli guys.
Oh, man.
But there was nothing quite like it, just having the beautiful hills of our neighborhood and having the wildlife and the locals. I mean, we live in a very ranch-esque side of LA County. I mean, we say we're LA people and we do a lot in the city, but a little bit about our hometown is we are in the hills and there is horse and farm country out here. So the occasional horses would pass by because the horse trail is on the back side of the farmers market and they'd come by and get their produce.
They go home.
Yeah, we even knew the local sheriffs and they would come out and local businesses would come out and get fresh produce for the restaurants. But we would serve tea to everybody and people would buy tea and I miss that. I really do miss that. There was the cannoli guys, there was 77 Drip, there was Happy Jellies. What was it? Tiny Creations. They would do ceramics. But it was really a community. And of course, Colleen and her husband, Jake. And they were the coordinators and they really made it a friendly place. Yeah.
I was not where I was seeing this because this is sweet, and you have to actually have snacks.
Well, I would literally, I think the routine would be we would buy Brothers, or not Brothers, Bonjour
Bonjour.
yogurt, fresh kefir yogurt. And they would make me a matcha kefir that was incredible. And then we would pick that up with pita chips, right? And then we get fresh strawberries from the produce guy. And then those would be my snacks. What else was there? Then the cannolis, right? And then I would get some fresh jam and
Honeys.
the honey, which he stopped.
Puppy.
Joaquin stopped there because he couldn't make it out.
Oh, like that was
Yeah, so
furthest.
we started selling the honeys for him, which is why we have honey. But that's all local honey. And then we'd have music from the local musicians. So it was really a vibe. You'd come out, you were in beautiful outdoor weather, you supported small businesses, and you got fresh produce. I mean, how could you not love that?
Okay, for me,
Yeah.
Monster.
Oh my God, I've been wanting to go back.
It's gone.
No.
No. Monster in Universal City Walk
It's gone.
is gone.
But Packing House still has it.
Right. But nevertheless, that was the vibe. You know, there's a difference. OC vibe and LA vibe are totally
Yeah,
different.
that's true.
Totally different. At which, you know, salute to Universal City Walk. We're so sorry that you guys have actually like practically downsized. You know, all of our their best shops are gone. Like Popcornopolis is gone. And you know, just a whole bunch of like little snack shops. But I remember us like just getting in that small line. It's supposed to be small. Obviously, it wraps around after a while. And us just waiting for our boba. And just the sweetness of how they would just make it right in front of us. And just the process of actually filling up that giant cup.
So if people haven't had Monster, which I'm sure a lot of them haven't,
Yeah.
Monster focused on a smaller menu with pure ingredients.
Yes.
So there were no powders. Everything was fresh milk, fresh. They had a strawberry matcha
Yes.
where they would literally take fresh strawberries and turn them into a syrup. The one thing I loved because they wanted a little LA flavor is they made homemade horchata. And they did that with fresh brewed Vietnamese coffee. And I'm not a coffee person, but Vietnamese dirty horchata coffee is like
Peak.
so good. And they would serve these things in logo branded, like you'd either get a mason jar and it'd have like, you know, like what is it, like a mouse or a teddy bear
Yes.
cap, like it had a little cap. They even had like flower wreaths at
Yeah.
one point for your drink
Yes.
to give it that California vibe. It had like sunflower head wreaths, like Coachella
Right.
vibes. And then there was what else was there? Oh, and then the light bulbs, which I still have. I use them for cold brewing.
Yeah, the light bulbs are these light bulb shaped
Yeah, I
glasses.
had them memorized. The glass, so the big mason jars with the teddy bear heads were 30 ounces. The light bulbs were 26, 25. And then you could get a regular cup, which was like 16 ounces.
Wow. Yeah, I don't remember that much, but.
But another thing they would do is you could order what's called a storm cloud style.
Yes,
And
yes.
it was non-colored, but it was fresh
Cotton candy.
cotton candy that they would spin and put it around the lid of your drink
Yes.
and then stick the like an extra long straw
Which is
through.
literally why everybody got the light bulb shaped
Because it was
glass.
thin at the top, and then you'd put it was basically a light bulb with a rain cloud on top.
Yes.
And then you could, if you really wanted to, get like light toppings sprinkled on it, like chocolate chips or mochi balls. But I would always get fruity
Oh
pebbles.
my God, you are so making me miss them so bad right now.
You sorted it.
I did. I did. I mean, are they still in Koreatown?
No, they're
Okay.
only in the Packing House now.
Oh, I
That's why I've
don't
actually been wanting to go, but the Packing House in Orange County also has the Blind Rabbit. Was it
want
the Blind Rabbit?
to have them. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a whole
No,
other
yeah. But
thing. Maybe we'll just have to go on a tour.
literally, you have to dress like you're about to go clubbing when you go to the packing house. It's just a regular shop,
It's
but
not.
it's not.
You're so funny. It's
Well,
not.
it's like a
It's a
warehouse.
warehouse of small, posh businesses.
It's not posh. I don't think it's posh.
There's a lot of, well, some of them are posh.
It's
Most of
not
them. I mean, they even have
posh.
that
People
in
go there to get
Disney.
drunk. How posh can it
It's a
be?
small business drunk house. That's what Eugene wants you to
That's what I'm
know.
trying to say. I'm not saying though that they are not, you know, posh-esque, you know, but you can't buy class, dude. You can't buy class. So the one bar that you did mention is the one place that I actually do I will actually doff my hat to as posh. Oh, no. Because, oh my gosh, their seats were amazing. And then, like, when they give you some of these samplers, woo!
They're not supposed to give you samplers. That was my magic. Because I talked to their mixologist.
Oh, yeah, you swayed your sommelier card.
Yeah.
Ma'am. Cheers to that.
Cheers to that. I can tell you this story really quick. So I was developing Apish. And Apish is unique because a lot of people think orange chocolate is kind of a traditional pairing. But because I was trying to make Apish to symbolize Jeffrey from Professor Elemental, his sidekick.
Yes.
Who's like this giant orangutan. Butler. But also like cyber cop amazing thing. And so I had to make a thing to embody his personality. And also Professor Elemental doesn't like too many flavor things. So he's like, I'm not into flavor. I know people are. I'm going to turn you loose.
Right.
I mixed a psalm specifically with it so it wouldn't be as cakey as a typical flavored tea.
Yes.
But the base is passion fruit.
Yes.
Which is not normal. And then dark chocolate. And then I add ginger and orange. Mm-hmm. So it's like fruity and spicy and malty.
Yes.
Just like Jeffrey.
Just like Jeffrey.
Which you can still get on the website, by the way. But anyways, they made a cocktail that was absolutely the same flavor profiles.
Yes.
And I had to ask them, and then we had a chat about it, how they were, I think it was, oh my god, I forgot where they got it. I know it's somewhere in South America. They were working with this company that specialized in passion fruit liqueur. And they were developing it, and they wanted them to create a cocktail for it. So that was their signature cocktail. And I was like, how did you get the dark chocolate? This is fascinating. And it was just a lot of back and forth and talking about the flavor profiles and this new company. And then talking about my tea. And that's why they brought out all these samples for us to try.
Yes.
Because they were curious about like my flavor profiles on my tea and how they were similar to cocktail bases and like that kind of flavor wheel.
Yeah.
But that's why we did it.
Toro 10 Tea Spectral did hold the title of cocktail of teas.
Yeah.
For quite a while.
Yeah. Definitely need to make a cocktail. But I think my favorite drink from them is it's their house pina colada. Okay. They call it the 24 karat colada.
Yes.
But because it's called the blind rabbit, they do fresh. They make fresh pressed carrot juice.
Mm.
So it's carrot juice and then cream of coconut with pineapple juice. And it literally tastes like a carrot cake. It's divine. Huh. So.
Dangerous.
Look what you started.
That sounds dangerous, but either way.
Anyways, thank you.
Of course.
Joining us. And that was a really wonderful note to end on. And I hope everyone is doing well.
Yes.
We're really looking forward to seeing all of you again. I am absolutely tearing at the bit too. Just see our community again at LitFest. So thank you so much.
Yes. And for those that actually want to catch us at LitFest, you can go right ahead and look them up on Instagram. LitFest in the Dina.
Yeah.
Or look up Pasadena LitFest. There are actual other LitFests out there.
There are, actually. So, working on developing another one, but that's another story.
Yes. Until next time.
Until next time. Cheers, everyone.
Cheers.